Yeah, thanks again to everyone else that's everyone that's helped us open the meeting by reading, and I'll take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started, and extend a warm welcome to anybody visiting us for the first time tonight, and huge welcome to anyone that might be new to our meeting this evening. We're glad you're here, and we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So yeah, we do have a speaker this evening, and it's my privilege to introduce him. This individual wandered into our meetings 7 years ago, and it's been an absolute joy to watch her journey through this, you know, amazing program of finding us and getting involved. And she's incredibly active in, she's active in service in Higna groups, and you know, it's been amazing to watch her grow and change over the last 7 years. I've had quite a lot of interactions with them, so it's been great fun. I love her to bits. And with that, I'm just going to introduce you to Ellie, who's going to share her experience, strength and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever she's comfortable with. Her experience, strength and hope, a journey into and through Narcotics Anonymous. So Ellie, the floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. I'm Ellie. I'm an addict. Well,
hi, Ellie.
Hi, everybody. I must say, I completely forgot that I was going to be sharing tonight, which is a good thing, because I obsess a lot and freak out ahead of time. So I'm grateful to be here, and welcome to anybody who's new to this, to our Blue Jeans meeting, or new to our Narcotics Anonymous. If you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, this is, we all started at one day at a time. We all felt like we didn't know what was going on. At least that's my story. One of the things I love about Narcotics Anonymous, and also dislike, is like all the years, I actually would have had more years, but I did relapse. I'll share about that after, but all the readings that we do, the who, what, why, and how, I sometimes I think, oh my God, I've heard this a million times, you know, but I always get something out of it, out of one of them, you know, depending on what I'm going through. And at the moment, I'm going through the why are we here? bear with me. I have a sinus condition that causes me to get hoarse throughout, you know, as I'm sharing. But like I said, I'm grateful to be here. And who is an addict? I am an addict. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous, I lived in the States. I'm born in New York, in Brooklyn, New York. And I lived too. I'm also duly diagnosed. So I have, you know, I'm an addict, and I also have a mental illness diagnosis. So I have two diseases to work with, and with the mental illness, I get outside help. And of course, with Narcotics Anonymous, I have a sponsor, and I have, you know, people in the program that I talk to on a regular basis, and I go to a meeting every day. I did not know I was an addict. Partly because, well, I smoked a lot of pot in my days, and, you know, I was a hippie, you know, kind of a hippie, and I used drugs, but I also used my psychiatric drugs. When things got really hard for me, my mental illness is trauma, so it's PTSD. And I was always given medication for, you know, depression, anxiety, and I abused them all, every single one of them, even Thorazine, if anybody knows about that. That's the kind, they give you Thorazine in a hospital, and you do the Thorazine shuffle. You're so out of it. I wanted to run away from all my, when I felt upset and I could not control my emotions as part of my illness, my mental illness, I could not control my emotions. I really thought I was going to die. I really felt like I was dying, and I used so that I would take so many pills so that I wouldn't have to feel, and I'd sleep. And that sleeping part, depending on how many pills I took. Sometimes I had to go to the hospital and have my stomach pumped. Other times my first husband had to walk me around the room and throw me in a shower. After a while he just got, I took these pills because I really believed that sleeping, when I woke up and I was really drugged, that I was okay, that I felt the pain, the emotional pain was not there anymore. I was so messed up that I couldn't feel it. And I really believed that that was helping me. Years later, I've got a lot of, I'm 73 now. I've got a lot of years and a lot of baggage, and it's hard in 45 minutes to go through it all. But I was married, I got married in 71, I think, or 74. I don't even remember. I think I was 21 years old. And boy, I was like a 5-year-old emotionally. And my ex-husband was also not too together. He was an alcoholic and I smoked a lot of pot. And then started popping pills when I found this. We were just two different people, and I was a mess most of the time throughout, you know. And the thing was that I didn't know I was an addict was because by the time I found the rooms, I had a job. I had a job at an early age. You know, be an artist, and I became a graphic designer, and I taught myself how to do all that stuff. And I wanted, you know, to... I thought I wasn't an addict because I had a job, I had a car, I had a house, I had a daughter. My life was falling apart, but I thought it was because of my mental illness. I didn't even think it was the drugs. At the time I came into Narcotics Anonymous back in 2002, I was addicted to benzodiazepines, and I was abusing them along with other drugs that I had, including, and I didn't mix alcohol with all that stuff. But the things that triggered me the most, which caused me to have that emotional breakdown, was my relationship. I remarried. My first husband and I got divorced. That's a whole other story. I won't even go into that. But I went through a lengthy custody battle. I lost. Eventually, I gained my daughter. I got remarried. I moved to Virginia with my job. And... I really didn't think, I thought it was my mental illness, but I kept abusing my medication. And I remember at one point, two things. I was in the pharmacy one day, and my medication wasn't ready. My benzos weren't ready. And I started screaming at the, it was some kind of commotion in the, where you pick up your prescriptions, and they had it in the front of the store. And my doctor never phoned it in. And I started yelling at the pharmacist or the person that was dispensing the medication. You don't understand. I have to have this medication. I'm going to have a seizure if I don't. Now, the thing is, I didn't know that. I made that up. I tried everything to get that medication. The reality is, yes, you can. If you don't take benzodiazepines, you can. It's like alcohol in a pill form, in a way. That's what I've been told. And I couldn't skip it. I kept upping the dose. You know, one is too many, 1,000 never enough. One was no good. I would take 2 or 3 or 4. And I went to work like that. And then when I remember one day walking with my prescription in the parking lot, thinking like, ha ha ha, I'm addicted to these things, and who cares? I'll always get them. My doctor will always give them to me. And that was the truth. I could go to a doctor, my psychiatrist at the time, my husband would tell me, please don't take more medication when you go there. Tell him you want to come off of it. And I'd come home, I'd tell my psychiatrist how bad life was, and he would double the dose or give me another pill to take. And I thought about that, you know, maybe I am addicted to, who cares? And I didn't care. And suicide was one of my go-tos. So I attempted suicide, and I'm just so grateful that thank God, I didn't know that I had a higher power. I didn't even know any of that. I didn't understand. I went to my first meeting, They talk about what is Narcotics Anonymous in our meetings, nonprofit fellowship, which is a problem. I didn't think it was a problem, but okay, I stayed. We met regularly to help each other stay clean. And I went to this first, my first meeting, and I saw, I was scared to death because I didn't know what to expect, and complete abstinence. And I thought, yeah, right. And, you know, I had no idea after that, but it does talk about, you know, doesn't matter how much or little you have, what your connect, who your connections were, but I absolutely, also they say the newcomer is the most important person at any meeting. Oh, wow, that's great. You know, they, when I went up to pick up a key tag, cause I thought maybe that's what I should do. They all clapped and I was like, yeah, wow. They like me, you know, wow. People at work didn't like me, but they like me and I'm going to keep coming back. So I didn't really know. I really didn't believe I was an addict cause I didn't use the same drugs. I didn't use a lot of people. In my area were, you know, crack, were addicted to crack cocaine, and a lot of heroin, but I didn't hear anybody talk about prescription drugs. So I thought, well, maybe they're wrong, you know? And then why are we here? If we're coming to the fellowship, we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. And that was absolutely true for me. And we had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. And I thought I did. I thought my drugs were saving me. I thought I couldn't get over when my husband and I would have a fight, the husband, both my husbands, actually, when I look back, when I felt that my husband didn't seem to not, when he would say no to something, or he seemed like he didn't care, that feeling of not caring triggered my my mental health, my PTSD, because that's how I grew up in my family of origin. They didn't care, and there was, and it was worse. But the feelings underneath that were, I was the little girl again, and a little girl, little children can't. I was told by my sister. Oh, that's the other thing. I have amnesia from childhood. So my sister had to tell me a little bit about myself. She's my younger sister. And she would talk about, you know, things that I did. My father was very violent. And she said I would sit down after he beat me up. I'd sit down and just stare off into space and I would get up. And this is when I was a teenager. I would get up and just leave and go out like nothing happened. And so I had that ability to cut off and dissociate. So I generally, but I also had the emotional stuff was so powerful that, again, I thought I was going to die. So the drugs seemed to help me. And now I'm hearing, guys are telling me I have to stop. I have to give up my drugs. And like, how am I going to do that? You know, now I have to find a new doctor because I don't want to go to this doctor anymore. I have to find a new psychiatrist. This guy's been over treating me. Meanwhile, I was the one that was asking for all this stuff. And that's exactly what I did. I damaged my relationship with my husband, my first husband and my second husband, though we are still married. I damaged the relationship between my daughter and myself. I damaged my problem. I was making friends in the new area in Virginia, and I didn't have anybody to go to, actually nobody. And I used to think about, what would I do if something happened, something terrible happened? I'd have no one to talk to. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, it didn't seem that way. It seemed to be, they say life on life's terms. I had problems life on life terms. I didn't like the way life was. You know, I saw every challenge as I faced it as a victim. It was, everything was happening to me and I didn't know how to deal with it. And drugs seemed, or suicide seemed the only option. And, but in Narcotics Anonymous, I did hear this: for us, our disease always resurfaced and continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. So We realized we were sick people. Yes, I realized I was sick. And I kept coming back. I came to a meeting every night after work. And, you know, my husband at first, he wanted me to get help. And then when I did get help, he was annoyed because I wasn't home. It was like my life was full of problems. And I didn't know where to go, except I was told by my sponsor, listen, if your marriage is going to work, if things are going to be okay, you have to put your recovery first. And that's what I did. I just kept coming back, even though I wasn't 100% sure. And now they're telling me I have to find a higher power. I'm like, what? How am I going to do that? I don't believe in God. I wasn't raised with any religion. I wasn't raised with anything. It was like a void in my life. Now you're asking me all these things to do. And I thought, how the hell am I going to do it? And then you go to how it works. And those are the steps. And that was how it works. I had to, number one, the first step, I had to admit that I was powerless over my addiction, that my life had become unmanageable. And that was the truth. My life was completely unmanageable. I was still working. I was fighting with people, with my production guy. I was very unhappy. I used to think that maybe if, all right, I won't take drugs at work. Maybe I'll just take a flask with vodka and orange juice. So they'll never know. I didn't do it, but I thought about it. Like, I can get through work. Maybe I could get through work because I liked the way I felt when I drank, except, of course, I couldn't drink one drink. So I'm glad I never followed through with that bright idea. But, and then I found a sponsor. My sponsor was, how did I pick her? I went to a meeting every night, and this woman was celebrating, and she looked nice. She looked like a nice person, and she was celebrating like 10 years, and I was like, wow, okay, I'm going to ask her. And it turned out that she was very, very quiet, and so was I. I was very quiet, very introverted. So when I bought the basic text, and I read it, and I started writing, and we met, but I felt really uncomfortable about the whole thing. And I mean, I'm not like that now, but in those days I was. And so her husband was also in the program. So they both sponsored me at the same time, you know, and I couldn't talk to her. I would talk to him and vice versa. And they got me through, and she got me through my first three steps. You know, we had to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. All right, well, I guess I used the program because I was starting to get restored. I was feeling a little bit better. Things were still going on in life, in my life. Life on life's terms were difficult, still fighting with my husband. My daughter was out of control, or at least was an adult, young adult, who was making really poor decisions and having problems at work. And you know, that's what life on life's terms are. You know, I used to think this is God. Whoever God is causing all this stuff. God is causing all these problems. You know, I used to think God was like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, or Santa Claus. God was watching me. And if I was a bad girl, I wouldn't get any toys. Not that we ever celebrated Christmas and I didn't get gifts or any of that stuff. But I used to think something is watching me. I better be really careful. If I mess up, it's going to happen to me. That was my idea of God. And, but, you know, I just kept coming back. They say I put one foot in front of the other, and I still do that. I still put one foot in front of the other. I started to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I really started to believe that. A little bit at a time, and I made a decision. This is to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood in my work. And then I made a searching and fearless, I worked my fourth step, searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves with a different sponsor. And that was a really, and actually took me, for my fourth step, the first time it took me 2 years. I, to this day, still have problems writing. Because a part of the, I worked from the green and gold flat book, because that's what she worked from. Not every sponsor does, but she did. And the problem was that while I was writing, well, the questions I was answering was triggering my PTSD, and I had no memory, and I just couldn't do it. I would want to go to sleep. I could not go through with it. And I would talk to my psychiatrists at the time, and they said, my psychiatrists were not in recovery. They didn't really quite understand. And so I stopped. It took me a really long time to work my fourth step. They say not to, but it took me a long time. And, but I stayed clean, and I worked my fifth step with my sponsor. We did that in the park, which was a really nice thing. And I actually started feeling much better after I did that. That's when I felt the most growth. As far as sixth and seven, as far as defects of character, something that somebody gave me, it's a list of all character defects. I think there were like 100 on the list, and I'm looking at them. Yep, I got all of them, every single one of them. I've got all of these things. I thought of myself as being the worst possible person, absolutely the worst. I thought of myself as, none of this stuff would have happened to me if I was a good person. None of my parents would have loved me. My parents would have cared. So that was difficult, six and seven. But I stayed clean. Persons we had harmed became willing to make amends to them all. And that was really difficult because I had to put my parents on that list. And they said, how on earth am I going to put my parents on that list? In reality, I was a victim as a child. There's no question. I mean, I was lucky that I wasn't taken out of the home. In those days, they didn't take you out of the home unless somebody reported you. And, and I never told any of my teachers I had bruises. I'd go to school with bruises covered, with my clothes. And I never told anybody about the beatings, but I would have, this is when I hate when I talk about this kind of shit. This is what happens every single time. Whenever I have to talk about that, the stuff that went on in my life, my family of origin, I get a little bit twisted. So I had to make, I had like, how am I going to make amends to them? Well, my father had died before I actually got into recovery. And I was with him when he died. And I don't know, I never met him because I didn't really know how to make amends. I wouldn't have known how. And with my mother, that was really difficult because I was shut down every time I was with her. I brought her to live with us, not live with me, but I brought her to live in Virginia after we, that's in the States, where we lived. I had her go to, live in an independent living. She gave me such a hard time, but I generally, the amends I tried to make was to take her shopping, grocery shopping, to be there for her when she needed to go to the doctor, take off from work, when she went into the hospital. I really tried hard. And the one time we had an argument, we talk about, well, this is a spiritual program. I try to live spiritual principles. But we had a fight, and I stopped talking to her, and she went grocery shopping by herself, and she got on the bus to go home, and she had a heart attack and died. So I never got to really say goodbye, On the other hand, there was a part of me that felt free. As much as some people were horrified that I had shared that in a meeting, I felt free because I no longer had to keep trying and trying and trying to make her like me, make her, I found out I can't change anybody. I can't change people, places or things. She was who she was. And in a way, there was that relentless feelings of failure on my part for myself were kind of gone. And I dream of her. There were days that, you know, now I live in Italy, and there are days I really want to call her and just talk about whatever. But you couldn't, I couldn't do that with my mother. I couldn't just talk about whatever. My mother wasn't capable of that. But I still think about her, and I don't have that, I don't have those resentments towards her anymore. At least I don't think so. I don't feel it. And step nine, to make the direct amends. That's what the direct amends were, you know, towards my mother. I tried really hard. And 10, I continued to take personal inventory. And when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. And this is early in my recovery. This is before my relapse. And then I worked step 11. And I, you know, trying to pray and meditate was real difficult for me. I didn't know what that really meant. I would forget to pray. I would forget to meditate. I would, I really didn't know what it was all, honest. And I had almost 14 years, but I was clean. I really was clean. And I had a lot of sponsees. I had a lot of sponsees who had mental illness, who were, felt that they, I would be able to understand them. And and step 12, having had a spiritual awakening. I did have some spiritual awakenings. I really did. But then in my 12th year, my whole world fell apart. It really did. I can't go really into it, but it changed my life where with my husband and I, he had to come back to Italy. And I had a decision to make, do I want to stay in the States and live in a house that I can't afford? My daughter was pregnant at the time. She didn't want to stay. Our relationship was going downhill. And I made the decision to move to Italy, where I didn't know a soul. I didn't speak Italian. I just assumed everybody would speak both English and Italian. Well, I was wrong. And there were no meetings close by where I lived. And I started to go to one AA meeting on a Saturday. I just didn't feel like I fit in. You know, I just didn't feel like I could really share, because the programs, our program is the disease of addiction. It's not the disease of alcohol. Alcohol is a drug. And I have the disease of addiction. I have obsession compulsion. It was what I couldn't really share that there. They didn't really want to hear it. In around, I guess it was in the spring, maybe April or May, my daughter had her daughter, my granddaughter, and she decided that she's going to have no contact with me at all. And absolutely none, zero. I couldn't call her. She blocked me. She completely stopped. I didn't know where she was, how she was. I did know, actually. I had a friend who would report back to me and even send me pictures. But I started becoming very jealous of this friend. And on Christmas Eve, I celebrated 7 years Christmas Day. Christmas Eve, this friend happened to tell me on the phone that she was going over to my daughter's house to visit for the holidays. And I had asked this friend, could you at least ask her if I could come to the States? Could you ask her? Well, of course, she never did ask her. And of course, I was not invited. And my daughter wanted to have nothing to do with me. And I didn't have a program. I didn't have a sponsor. I could have picked up the books. I had my literature. I chose not to. I joined a group for parents who were estranged from their adult children. I also had been on medication, psychiatric medication that I became allergic to. So my doctor took me off of it, and like, you know, that day. I had fallen and hurt my rib cage, and I could barely move. It was life on life's terms on steroids for me. And it was my sister-in-law who made one comment about the friend. She said, well, at least she's telling you how she is. Danielle is. That was it. That was it. I picked up. My husband had in Italy they have medicine in drops. So I don't know how many drops I took. And it was not the first time. It was the second time. I completely forgot that I had done it before. But it was that time, that Christmas Eve, that I remembered. Oh my God. This is what they talk about. I have no higher power. I have nothing. I am not going to make it. There was a good chance that I could talk these doctors into giving me pills, more pills too. I mean, I would have planned it. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I couldn't find meetings, and it was just this one AA meeting, and they didn't really want me there. I tried to join the group of women on WhatsApp. They never let me, gave me the phone number, and you know. And the next morning, I woke up with the thought in my head to Google Skype NA. And we were on the Skype platform. We were on Skype before we became part of BlueJeans, this platform. And I thought, wow, I found a meeting. I found a meeting in Australia. And it was at my, it was like, a, I it must have been 11 o'clock because it was in the winter. And I went to that, my very first NA online virtual NA meeting. And I don't, you know, I keep thinking, did I start sharing immediately or was I called on? I don't even remember. I didn't know the protocol, but I was so thrilled that I found the meeting because I really believed, and I still believe, this was my higher power. My higher power wants me to be alive because my higher power wants me to be able to help other suffering addicts, other people who have both the disease of addiction and even the disease of mental illness. It's tough to have both. It's tough to have one. It's tougher to have two. And I came to my very first NA meeting Christmas Day, and I thought, did I relapse? Did I don't know. Did I want to lose all the time that I had? So I was back and forth and hemming hawing, do I don't know. And went on. I went to every single day. I went to the meetings in Australia, and then someone told me about the illness. I think it was Steve told me about Illness and Recovery, which is in Higna. I started going to those meetings, to the Hign these meetings, this Higna meeting. I couldn't believe it. Here I am, a newcomer again. And then after sharing about it, I talked about it with my sponsor, and she said, "Well, you know, you only use." I didn't tell her about the other time. I did find a sponsor here in Italy who speaks English, and I said, "No, I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna take the responsibility." I did relapse because I had no connection to my higher power. I didn't just relapse by taking a drug. I relapsed by losing that connection, by emotional. It was an emotional and spiritual relapse. I relapsed many times spiritually throughout my years in recovery, but I've never picked up. This was so serious. And I thought, I don't care. And if I, so what? I start all over again. And it was, they talk about the gift of desperation. And for me, it was a gift of desperation. I couldn't believe that I found these meetings, and not only that, it's the best recovery I have ever had, hands down. Not that I didn't love my face-to-face meetings in the States. I loved the people in the program. I loved my friends. These saved me completely. I was so thrilled to be able to take on a service commitment. So I'll just fast forward as to where I am today. And what happened to me today, because it's pretty significant. Oh, Mike, by the way, I thought I would never, ever hear from my daughter again. Never. That was what I said. I'll never hear from her again. My daughter and I speak now. I got a text message. Was it yesterday, I think, that my great I have a grandniece who had a seizure, and she was in really bad shape. She was in the hospital. And I have two grandnieces, actually I have three, but these two are twins, and they're 20 years old. And She had when she in 2013, she was diagnosed with some Guillain-Barré, which was a devastating illness, and she almost died. They had to they brought her back to life. She was really in terrible, terrible shape, and I thought, oh my God, this might be happening again. And then I didn't hear for anything. I didn't hear back. I didn't hear if she was okay or not. And I was really upset because, for one thing, I have a sister who didn't tell me. I have a sister who's like my mother, who doesn't give a crap. She only cares about herself. And I cannot believe that my sister's on Facebook posting about sports and cats and nothing. She didn't say a word, and her granddaughter is in the hospital and was almost in a coma. I mean, when they brought her in, she was in really bad shape. She wasn't talking, and now she's talking, but there's something still kind of wrong with her. I was very upset because it triggered me again, back to childhood. There it is. It's not that I'm not being cared about. It's like my family is so screwed up, even with something like this. And I was in a rage today. So I prayed and meditated, and I felt calmer. I contacted my niece, her mom. And right before that, I was talking to my husband. I said, I wonder if drugs are involved. And sure enough, my niece is using. And my grandniece is using. They're all using. Everybody. My sister, my nieces, my grandnieces. I'm so angry, actually. But I have no control. I have no control over people, places, or things. I cannot say anything. They all know I'm in recovery. I was planning to go there. I tell my husband, I think I want to go there. I want to see her. I'm not going to go. I can't afford to go there. I mean, I don't have money to afford to go, but I really can't go because I can't be in an environment where people are getting high. And they get high. I mean, it's weed. I never thought weed was a big deal, but it is. I can't smoke. I can't get high. And to be honest, as much recovery as I have under my belt, I don't know if I'd be tempted. Even if I came to a meeting, I mean, I haven't smoked weed in ages, and I loved it. I could just see myself saying, oh, I don't want, I can't, I can't, I can't. Okay. Can't afford to do that. It's not that I can't afford to relapse. I can't afford to lose my connection to my higher power. I really can't. I love my higher power now. My higher power saved me so many times from what I felt like was insanity. And it wasn't from drugs, it was insanity of life on life's terms that I had such a hard time dealing with. And I can't say I love my life. I like my life. And challenging, I have to learn Italian. And somebody at my age, it's not that easy, but I'm doing it. I do it every single day. I practice every single day. I have an app. I practice every single day. And I'm starting to understand it, which is amazing. What a concept. And I practice my recovery every single day. Every day. And when I don't, I could feel it. Last thing, I'm an artist. Art was my life. I started painting, but I can't do anything like shopping, sometimes even eating to me. When I was painting, I couldn't stop. I didn't want to talk to anybody. It was just like using. I had to pray about that. I mean, this is something I love, and it's very common for artists to feel this way, but I'm an addict in recovery, and I can't afford to feel this way. I can't afford to shut people out. I can't afford not to clean my house or go grocery shopping. Or cooking, or being present for my husband, or for anybody, or even sitting in a meeting and not even paying attention. I can't afford that. I had to make a decision. Like, what am I going to do? How am I going to balance this? I'm going to balance it. I'm only going to work a couple hours a day. And, you know, I just can't do it all day, all night, because that's what I would do. I would stay up all day and work into the night. My house is a disaster. And so, yes, I did a little bit of artwork today. I don't feel the insanity. I don't know. I can't say I live one day at a time. I can't say tomorrow it will be different, but you know what? I have a chance every single day, sometimes every single hour, well, I always have a connection to my higher power, unless I choose not to. It's my choice. I choose to stay present, to live in the moment. My New Year's resolution is to continue on a spiritual path, to continue helping people in recovery, to continue working in my recovery, and to just live. When I'm in a place of, when I, after I meditate, I'm in such a wonderful spiritual place. Life feels so much better. And like I said, having two illnesses makes it difficult. It makes it really difficult. My mind is always going, 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 going. And I can't take drugs for it. I take an antidepressant. I forgot to mention that. I do take medication. I share that at the illness and recovery meeting that we have on Higna. I take everything responsibly. I don't. And that's a miracle. Really a miracle. Because before that, like I said, I would who the hell overdoses on Thorazine? I mean, that's a crazy drug. But I did. I did. And so I feel like yeah, my life is good actually. And I love these meetings, and I love the people in these meetings, these especially Higna. My tribe, my family away from my crazy family in New York. And as far as my daughter, I keep hoping. I keep hoping that I'll get to meet my granddaughters. I keep hoping that, you know, we'll stay, continue to stay connected. That's a whole other chapter of my life that, you know, life on life's terms. So with that, thank you. Thank you all for being here and listening. And thank you, Steve and Jay, for your service. I love you guys. And I'll share the time.